Welcome back to Plug and Pay, a talk show where we bring you the latest and greatest of global payroll. I'm Angelique, Paysar's head of content, and today is a very special episode because I'm here with Max, Paysar's head of service delivery, here in Barcelona together. Isn't that nice? How have you been enjoying your trip to Barcelona so far, Max?
Thanks, Angelique. It's good to be back on another episode. And it's been amazing meeting the team here, including you and the others here in Barcelona, and strategizing together with Trevor and Mark for the next year and years onwards. And we have a lot of great things to share on global payroll. But today we'll stick to another topic, I believe, Angelique.
Yes, that's right. We've actually done another poll. Well, you did another poll recently. So we wanted to talk about controls. We did mention in the last episode that we'll be going from kind of risks leading onto controls. So we're going to be talking about the standardization of controls. So if you want to share with us the question that you asked and the answers and the results, please, Max.
Sure. I think these pollings on LinkedIn are very insightful and help to benchmark the global payroll operations of the network against other peer organizations. So this time the poll was about how do you rate the standardization of your global payroll controls? And the voters had four different answers to choose from. The first one was 25% or lower. So that means they have 25% of their controls standardized across their scope or less. The second option was 25% up to 50%. The third option was 50% up to 75%. And the last option was 75% or more. Now, what the results show is that 32% of the respondents, and we had quite a few of them, rate their standardization either 50% or lower, which then, of course, also means that 68% indicated they have 50% or higher. So those were the results of this poll. Quite a different span across the people who participated in the polling question, Angelique.
Yeah, I mean, we can see that obviously the highest one is 75% plus, which is good. But it looks like kind of on average, it's only around half of them. So I'm quite surprised by that. But obviously, from your experience, would you also be surprised by that? Or how would you be voting in this poll yourself from your experience?
Yeah, it's interesting, right? Maybe before I share what I would vote, just outline the importance of standardizing your controls across the global payroll scope. Because if you have a multi-country payroll, you are faced with all kinds of different localities around global payroll and your local payrolls, which still is fairly hyper-local. But if you're running global payroll operations, it's really crucial that you find that right level of standardization of your controls while still meeting that very important ACT principle in global payroll. And ACT, of course, stands for an accurate, compliant, and timely payroll. And now, why is standardizing your controls important? For me, and also from my experience, it serves a few purposes. The first one is your operations are much more scalable, which means that if you would go into new territories or into new countries, you'll be able to quickly deploy standardized controls. What it also does, it enables digitization and automation of your controls. Because if you, for instance, run a payroll of 50 countries and you would run different controls across those 50 countries, although technology is evolving very rapidly, it's very difficult to standardize your controls. So it's better to have those standardized controls, leverage automation, and do more with the less or same. And what I normally did within the teams at my scope is I would rotate country or regional responsibilities within the team. Now, it's very easy to rotate that if at least your controls and how you evidence them are actually standardized. So it makes the hurdle to move into new countries much lower, and therefore also helps to educate your team members. And as you are rotating scopes within the team, by handing over one control or one scope to the other person, they can then, with a fresh look at how you've been operating the controls and see if it still meets the standards. And probably the third reason of why you would want to standardize controls is that you're always audit ready. So whenever there is an external statutory audit or a financial audit or just an internal audit that looks after risk and mitigation, you have a very standardized and good storyline where you would standardize your controls. Now, standardization of controls is perfect, but as I mentioned, payroll is still hyper local. So what you'll need to do is to find that balance of I design controls in a standardized way, but I might deploy them with nuances within the local payroll environments. Now, you also asked me what, in your experience, what would you have voted? So I would have voted 75% plus, because I always strive for at least 80% standardization. And in my experience, reaching 80% is really feasible. And typically, when I started a new global payroll manager gig, it took me around a year to reach that level of standardization, went through a lot of change with the team, but ultimately everybody, internal stakeholders, the team members, external stakeholders, really underpins the importance of standardizing your controls.
Absolutely. And what would you say is the thing that's stopping people from standardizing more? I know you said it's difficult, but why is everyone not reaching that 80%, do you think, of standardization? That's
a very good question. So I haven't spoken to everyone in the world, Angelique, but I have spoken to a lot of other global payroll managers and peers. So there's a few factors that play into kind of resistance to standardization. One is I have always done it this way. So it's kind of a resistance to change. And, you know, I'm doing great stuff here. My payroll's always right. So why would you bother with levels of standardization? So it's an education piece, especially internally with the payroll teams, coordinators, leads, managers to really let them understand the why of standardizing controls. Because if you would indeed standardize, you could digitize and automate, and therefore less manual spreadsheets, less processes that are prone to error, less findings in audit results, and all of that creates work. And the workload within local, global, regional payroll is already extremely high. So if you can take away some of that pain, you have a great gain. And an example I have, I had an APAC lead, great personality, by the way, who also was kind of resistant to this change. And then I said to her, let's start in March of that year. And then by the time in December, I want you to be able to take 2 or 3 weeks of leave. And she was just like silent. She said, I've never had any leave. And I said, in addition to you having leave, you leave your laptop at home. She was like, no way. No, that's the reason why we go standardize our controls. And of course, there was more involved laying down processes, practices, but that's why we can standardize controls. Because you say, you run the December payroll for me. I'll just do a handover with the localities and how you would deploy it locally, because that could be nuances. But she ended up going 2.5 weeks on leave without touching the laptop at all. And then she said, okay, now I understand why we're doing this. So it's kind of that education piece and the balance between enforce a change and embrace a change. And there's always kind of a combination of the two.
So would you say then that standardization can help reduce key person dependencies then in teams? Is that like kind of related to what you were mentioning there? No?
Yeah, for sure. And it does remove key person dependencies. But the tricky part is there's a change management process around it, because people want to be important. I want to be important. You want to be important, Angelique. So by removing key person dependencies, you're kind of also giving a message. And it's not that to say you're replaceable or you're not important, but my angle has always been, I want to help you be successful. I want to help you reduce your workload. And I want to make sure you have a better work-life balance. So that was kind of always the angle that I took in terms of those controls. And what are the resistance has always been, and most likely will always be, is that payroll is just very local. My scope is really unique. And to a certain degree, that's true. But let me just give an example. So if you would run a payroll in India and the Netherlands, you would still want to run a variance control. So you look either at an employee level or at a pay code level. So summed up, aggregated to see what are the variance period over period, and can I actually justify this this variance? That control can be standardized in its design. However, how you deploy it might be different. So for a, in this example, like the Netherlands payroll might be 20 employees. You could do an employee level variance because it's just 20 employees. And you might even do 100% variance control. Wherever, if you might do India and you process 5,000 employees, you can't do 5,000 times 100 different variances, right? And you might even set a materiality threshold. So while you still do a variance, you still evidence it in the same way. The way that you operate it can touch on the local nuances. Similar to like if you would do your pre-payroll controls and you would check all the different data elements that flow into a payroll, like, of course, those will be different because in one country you need this data point, and in another country you need that data point. But the way that data flows, the way that the data is checked, the way that the data is verified and transformed could be the same. So therefore, always balance kind of global standards and local nuances. And you know, one of the quotes I always gave is, I need to look at, is like a control is only a control if it's evidenced and auditable. Because actually, you have a lot of payroll folks, and kudos to them, who work day and night to make sure the payroll is correct. They run reports, do checks and balances. But I say, that's great. Awesome, you do that. But if I would go in 6 months from now, and I would ask you this payroll, and we're now in, what is it, December, right? And I would ask you, okay, the payroll that you did in June, can you evidence to me how you validated the results were okay? You can't say to an auditor, yeah, I read a few reports. They were all great, ticking and tying, but crossing the T's, dotting the I's, everything was okay, but I can't show you. Then they say, well, you didn't review the process and the results because it's not evidence, it's not auditable.
True, true, I can see why. And what would you say then is for the people that do want to improve the level of their standardization of their controls, where to start? What would be your...
Yeah, great question. I've actually been asked this question a lot of times. So normally you would want to theoretically start with list down your risks, assess the risk, map the risk in terms of materiality, and then design a risk response, which leads into a control. But that's typically not the reality. So what I usually say is list all the controls that you're currently doing and note down the level of effort of doing it. Note down what kind of risk you're trying to mitigate. Start with what you already have and do that kind of on a global basis. You will typically find out that you have a lot of similarities between the controls. It's just not operated or designed in a standardized way. So by also letting people explain what they currently do and not necessarily saying that it's wrong, but you should only operate a control if it mitigates a risk, because that's what the control is about. I believe in the other podcast we said, right, the analogy of my kids, right? Want to be on time in school. So a risk is you sleep over, you need to set an alarm. That's a risk, right? So that's why you set an alarm. Look at it the same way as a control. If something happened 2 years ago, which led to an error, typically the response from payroll people is, we'll run an additional report of that one error that happened 2 years ago. And that stacks up over time. So you'll be running all kinds of controls because something happened at some point in time. So I'll say, start with what you have, review it, list it down, and then collaboratively across the scope, review it, and then reach levels of standardization. And payroll in many ways is never a revolution. It's always a marathon, an evolution, right?
And evolution.
It's not a sprint, it's a marathon. So take it slow, but reach the end goal.
Definitely. I think that's some really good advice. Thank you, Max. Other than controls, is there anything else that you wanted to share this week other than the poll? Something interesting that you've had or experienced in the payroll space?
Yes, actually, I did. Thanks for asking. So I was reviewing a new survey that actually one of our fellow payroll providers, ADP, issued, the potential of payroll in 2024, which detailed global payroll. And I just want to highlight three key kind of insights that I took out of that survey. So the first one is that the respondents in the survey say that their payroll data is a major consideration to their company to inform strategies, whereas 49% said the payroll data is actually included in cost management, especially in this tight economic environment, while 45% said it's actually supporting commercial growth, 44% expansion, and then 42% a very important topic, diversity, equity, and inclusion. Although payroll doesn't have maybe the 100% data set, it has a very big portion of that at their fingertips. So it's really important to start analyzing your data and that you deploy the tools to unlock the global payroll data and what we sit on. So it's actually of real strategic importance, Angelique. And then the next one I wanted to share was around the average time that the internal IT resources spent on managing data flows between business systems, so HR, time and attendance, benefit systems, all of that, everything that rolls up to payroll, that they spent every week per country. So every week per country. And the highest response was that 17% indicated that their IT teams on a weekly basis per country spend 16 to 20 hours on managing the data for payroll. So imagine you could leverage technology to reduce that, reduce cost, reduce resource allocation. So I found it very insightful and a bit eye-opening that still in 2023, we're faced with these kind of complexities, right?
Definitely. Imagine what that team could be doing with that time. You know,
exactly, supporting the business, perhaps.
Definitely. That was quite eye-opening, definitely, for sure.
Yes, exactly. And the last one that I wanted to share, is that they wanted to move the teams from operational to strategic, right? This has been a theme for years. And in this survey, 62% reported that they're reviewing how to do more with fewer people. Of course, this has a people impact, but what I used to say is do more with the same. Right. So again, we're talking about controls. How can you digitize and standardize controls to validate more with less time and more automation? So I think it's really insightful. So I would encourage everyone to just read through the report. But enough about me and what I've learned this week. Angelique, have you read or listened to anything you would want to share around global payroll with the audience?
Yeah, I did actually. I mean, I guess it's a little bit of a Payzer plug. But actually, our webinar that we did the other day with Tim Kelsey was really eye-opening for me because it was about some tips and tricks for year end. And he actually went into detail about, you know, various different countries, which was, for me, who's still fairly new to the payroll space, was really surprising to see, you know, how much it can differ from one to the other and how crazy this time of year is for all you payroll folks. So that was definitely my weekly eye-opener.
Great, thanks. Yeah, it's really a hectic time, especially for the countries that have year ends in December, right? So you need to process payroll with an earlier cutoff. You have an earlier pay date. You need to make sure you do year end. And by the way, do Christmas shopping, plan for Christmas dinners, plan for New Year's Eve. So to all the payroll people listening, we have your back. We really value you, and kudos to you putting in all the hard work getting the world paid around Christmas so the economy keeps on spinning and that the shops keep on gaining revenues, right? So thanks for sharing, Angelique. Welcome to the wonderful world of payroll. Yes.
I love it. And a lot of respect for all the payroll pros out there listening. So yes, thank you so much, Max, for sharing your insights and advice with us, as always. Sure. And I think we can wrap up today's episode here. We will be releasing another episode in about 10 days' time, which is our Christmas special. So keep an eye out for that. That will be a good one. We have a nice guest lined up. So watch out for that one on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and YouTube. And if you enjoyed this episode, make sure you leave a comment, leave a review. That's always good. And anything else to add, Max?
No, I wish everyone a very successful December payroll, and we'll be back soon. So thanks for listening and thanks for inviting me again, Angelique.
Thank you. Thanks for listening.